Welcome to the Title League Podcast. I'm Kurt, and today is a solo edition. I'm missing my partner in crime, Trish. She's unable to make it, but we're speaking to an NBA player, so we're going to really geek out from the basketball side of things. The last two episodes were more lifestyle focused with Cassie Athena and Shea Dawson. And today we'll be speaking with Oklahoma City Thunder forward Justin Jackson. We'll be touching on his time with the Dallas Mavericks in the bubble, what it's been like with this new team, this new young team in Oklahoma City, playing alongside the Canadians, fellow Canadians, and Shea and Lou. And of course, his career to date. He's a Tar Heel, a 2017 NCAA champion, and so much more. So looking forward to getting into it with Justin. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show, Justin Jackson. Justin, how's your morning?
It's been good, man. It's been really good.
You guys are in Portland, played last night, and obviously it's a crazy, crazy weird season. There's a lot of restrictions. Tell me a little bit about what it's been like so far.
Yeah, I mean, so like you said, there's a bunch of protocols that we and the teams have to go by. As of now, we have to test twice a day. So we test in the morning and then test at night. We have to wear a mask, obviously, which is kind of all around the world. But we have to wear a mask everywhere we go, even when we're sitting on the bench. If we're not playing, we go in the game, come back out of the game, we got to wear a mask. And honestly, when we go on trips, for me, it's not much different because I pretty much stay in my room anyways. But like when we go on trips, we're pretty much on lockdown. You know, we were in LA for what, I guess almost 5 days, before we came here to Portland, and, I really didn't leave my room unless we were going to the gym. So, it is different. It's weird. Then you get to the arenas and there's no fans at most of the places. So it's a different dynamic. But I think everybody's kind of, you know, rolling with the punches and just kind of going along with it.
So this is year four for you. So you've had a lot, there's a lot of guys that didn't even have a chance to go to the bubble because their teams weren't invited. You've played in the NBA during the regular world that we were accustomed to. You played in the bubble last season with the Dallas Mavs and now this season. How crazy is the contrast from the differences from a regular year with no COVID to the bubble to this?
I mean, honestly, you can't even compare them, honestly. I mean, you go back to how the league was before COVID hit. I mean, you know, for example, Oklahoma City, they had one of the best fan bases there were. Anytime you go there, you know, it's going to be packed. You know, they're going to be loud. And now we have a home game and all you see is on the sideline is, you know, essential workers.
Crazy.
And then you go to the bubble, we were even more secluded than we are now. And, you know, it's definitely, you know, I'll say, once you kind of take a step back, it's cool that I've been able to experience, you know, all three of them. Obviously, I hope that we can kind of get back to, you know, what we consider, quote unquote, as normal as possible. But, you know, I think guys are really just rolling with kind of what they're handing out to us, you know, pretty well. You know, whatever they say that we need to do, that's what we do so that we can continue to play and we continue to do our job. So, you know, it is a wild time. And, you know, we're just blessed to be able to continue to play basketball as our job. So that's kind of the mindset.
And just, you know, talking about being in the bubble with the Mavs, obviously, you know, your wife, Brooke, and now being on the road and the restrictions, and I'm not sure what it's like when you're at home. How has that been and how's it impacted your family just with dealing with all of the different restrictions and you know, being away from your wife for as long as you were with Dallas and then now with this situation, how has that played a role?
Yeah, I mean, it was tough. I mean, it's funny, we were keeping track of the days we were gone. I think we were gone for like 53 days, 55 days, something like that. So it's tough. You know, obviously everybody doesn't have wives, you know, in the league, but, you know, those that do have significant others and kids and, you know, family members, it is tough. You know, you take us kind of away. You know, I talked to a bunch of people about this, but, you know, for us, like our job is basketball, but like our getaway from basketball, it can be a whole lot of different things. But for me, like my getaway is my wife, right? My getaway is to go and hang out with her, we've got two dogs. So to go hang out with her and the dogs and, you know, watch movies, watch TV, you know, that kind of stuff. And so to take us away from that out, you know, it causes, you know, I think it can cause some issues for some people. But now you go to this season, and obviously the league is trying to keep it as normal of a travel schedule and as normal of a season from that standpoint. But the month of January, after we get back from this road trip, we would have been gone for 21 days out of the 30 days in January. So, you know, because we're having to fit so many games into, you know, not as much time as we usually have, and because they're trying to limit all of the, you know, leaving to go play one game and coming back and all that sort of travel, it's causing for kind of a crazy travel season. So, you know, like I said, it's our job. And so, you know, we can't necessarily complain about it. But there are some difficulties that come with, you know, what COVID is kind of doing to our season and what, you know, we're having to kind of be flexible with.
It's been crazy. I mean, coming up on, I guess it's a year plus now that we've lived in this crazy world. You know, we're all kind of wishing for that normalcy to return. I haven't been able to get to a game. Yeah, I said earlier before we went, you know, on air with the pod, like, we're in Canada, so we're used to getting out to Raptors games. You know, we're used to being able to travel to the U.S. and get to games. Our borders are closed. You know, we can't travel. The Raptors are playing in Tampa Bay. This is a crazy, crazy time that we're living in, and everyone is at that point where, you know, COVID is so redundant. We just want to have that normalcy back. So believe me, when you talk about OKC, like, we're used to seeing those electric crowds and the entire NBA world talking about how amazing it is. And this is your first season there, and you haven't even been able to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that's crazy. Talking about your two Canadian teammates in Shea and Lou, what have those guys been like, and what has it been like playing around alongside with them?
Man, you know what's crazy is, you know, I've been blessed to be, you know, with the Kings first and then the Mavs.
Shout out Dwight Powell, Canadian as well.
Another Canadian, huh? But, you know, those two teams, everybody got along. We all, you know, everybody loved hanging out with each other. Everybody loved to, you know, be with each other. And then I get here and, you know, obviously, you know, coming onto a new team and stuff like that, it's some adjustments. But I mean, it's as if we've been together for multiple years. You know, like I said, everybody gets along. Shea and Lou are a huge part of that. And so, you know, just being able to, obviously Shea and Lou are amazing basketball players as well, but being able to be teammates and hang out with them and be around them and stuff like that makes it even better. So they've been awesome, man. So it's just, you know, it's a matter of everybody trying to continue to grow together and, you know, hopefully get closer and help us even more on the court.
Have they taught you any Canadian lingo?
You know, not much yet. You know, not yet. I think eventually we'll get to that point. Maybe I'll take some classes with them. but not, they don't do it too much.
You know, touching on your teammates, I shouted out Dwight. So I was a teammate of Dwight's at IMG Academy. We were roommates there. And then he went on to Stanford. And now obviously he's been with the Mavs. And, you know, you spent, 2.5 seasons in Dallas. And, you know, before even meeting you or speaking with you today, you can tell you really enjoyed your time there. And, mm-hmm. you know, that entire family environment, that MFFL, obviously Mark Cuban, Coach Carlisle. What were some of the highlights of your time in Dallas, and how much did you enjoy that time?
Well, I think for me, man, you know, wherever I might play, right, whether that means I'm in OKC for multiple years or I play somewhere else, you know, for me, I try to just embrace and just dive right into whatever the team is. So Sacramento, you know, it took some time getting used to California. California is a different vibe.
And you're from Texas, so very different. I'm from
Texas, so it's very different. But even there, it was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to dive right into this. And then I got to Dallas, and I felt a little more home because I was in Texas. And then obviously having, you know, the teammates that I had, it made it even easier. But then it was like, okay, I'm going to dive right into this. And I'm going to enjoy where I am right now. You know, kind of one of the things that I like to say is like attack the now, right? So, you know, when I was in Dallas, I'm all in, you know, I'm here, I'm enjoying my time here with them. You know, Dallas gave me the opportunity, me and my wife, you know, Dallas is actually home base for us. So the city of Dallas was super dope outside of basketball and the fans and all that sort of stuff. Dallas is just a cool city. And so that gave us kind of the place to kind of settle down. And then you go to basketball, obviously having, you know, Mark as a, as an owner, coach, Coach Carlisle as a coach. And then, like I said, my teammates, you know, it was an amazing experience. And, you know, obviously it sucks being traded, but I mean, all those memories and stuff that I had being there with those guys, it was pretty awesome. And, you know, now that I'm in OKC, it's like, okay, now let's get it here, you know? And so that's just kind of the mindset each and every time each season starts. And you know, that's kind of how I'm going to continue to have it.
So growing up in Houston, who did you support and cheer when you were growing up?
Man, growing up, I was a Spurs fan.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was during their whole dynasty era with Tim and Tony Parker, Ginobili, you know, all those guys, man. It was that's who me and my family enjoyed watching play. And so, you know, I get some pushback I did whenever I was in high school. You know, why don't you cheer for the Rockets? That's your home team. You know, man.
And those were some days like the T-Mac Yao days, right?
Facts. Those were some pretty good days to be Rockets fans for sure.
I'll never forget that dunk, T-Mac on, what was it, Sean Bradley?
On Sean Bradley, yeah. But no, that's like my favorite player, and this goes way back, but my favorite player is George Gervin.
Oh, yeah.
Which played for the Spurs. That's the reason I wear number 44. And so, yeah, the Spurs was the team that me and my family cheered for. Obviously, it changed now. kind of who it was back whenever I was younger.
And, you know, over your career, basketball has taken you, obviously, to legendary UNC, Tar Heel, champ, playing for Coach Roy Williams. You know, then you talk about Coach Carlisle, brief stints with, you know, Luke Walton, Coach Yorger, and now a young coach and Coach Dagnold. What has that been like playing for so many different coaches, but talented in so many different ways? And you go from an iconic Hall of Fame coach to, you know, the NBA. What have been the differences that you've noticed personally?
I think honestly, man, college and NBA is just totally different. I mean, college, you know, there's so many more aspects to basketball and to your career, whether it's academics or it's you trying to figure out who you want to be as a person, and then it's basketball, and it kind of goes through all that. So I think something that Coach Williams does so well is, you know, he prepares you and he coaches you for not just basketball, but for life outside of basketball. And, you know, once you get to the NBA, it's like, okay, it's all, this is a business, this is a job. So we need performance, we need wins, we need success. And so I think it's just different. You know, I think X's and O's are huge in the NBA. And I think that's, you know, kind of the key thing when it comes to coaching in the NBA is being able to put guys into positions to help themselves succeed and to help the team succeed as much as possible. And I think that's the main focus when you get to the NBA. So it's just, I think it's just different. I mean, you're coaching in the NBA, you're coaching grown men, as opposed to in college, you're coaching guys that just left high school or only a few years out of high school that are trying to find their way. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, those two different dynamics. It's just a different way of coaching.
You said it's so different, like college to the league. And obviously you're now in year four, and I'm, you know, 4 years in is an accomplishment. It's hard to get to the league, and then it's hard to stay in the league. But now after 4 years, you see the young guys coming in. Do you start to notice that you're mentoring or giving advice and helping guys in the locker, and you see guys that are on a two-way or fringe just trying to make a roster? Do you find time to help those guys?
For sure. I mean, I'm What's crazy is I'm this is on my fourth year, and I think I'm like the fifth oldest on a team.
Crazy, right?
And so, you know, for me, it's like, even though I am young, it is kind of taking on, obviously we got real vets like George and Al and Mike, you know, we've got guys that have been here in, you know, 5+ years, but for me, it's also taking on that, okay, I've also had a bunch of experiences myself, and I like to view myself anyways as a little bit more of a mature guy anyways. So for me, it is, like you said, that like, that's a responsibility, you know, like that's kind of how the NBA works, is like you find your way through the NBA and then eventually you kind of become a guy who gives that mentorship, like you said, or gives those experiences to try to help the next guy. And so, yeah, so I definitely try to do that as much as I can. You know, I think that's a big part of just who I am as a person, is trying to help the next guy. And so, you know, that's definitely the focus that I have, you know, throughout this year.
So when you came into the league, who were some of the guys that helped you out, that you gravitated towards?
Yeah. So my vets were Vince Carter, Zach Randolph, George Hill, and Garrett Temple. You know, those were my vets. And I still have a group chat with Garrett, George, and Vince. And so those are the guys that, I, you know, kind of, you know, went to. And so, you know, it was pretty cool to be able to have a legend like him, and then have a guy like Z-Bo, who is a legend in of himself.
Talk about someone who dominated in the paint, but under the basket.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And then somebody now being able to connect with George, again, you know, it's pretty cool to be able to say that those guys are guys that I got to, you know, be a rookie to and stuff like that. So those are the guys.
When you think about Vince, I mean, Vince was still throwing down windmills in layup lines at 40. Like, you know, when you're young, you think you can eat anything, you can show up, you don't really need a stretch. Did you notice that early on, just the routine that the vets took and how they took care of their bodies and their pregame warm-up and that entire, people often just think it's basketball, but there's so much that goes into that body of work.
Yeah, I mean, Vince was, he got treatment so much before practice, after practice, before games, after games, even at halftime of games. And obviously, like you said, he was, you know, that was his second to last season of being in the league. But you definitely see the difference between really young guys and how they, you know, carry themselves or how they, you know, do things as far as, you know, taking care of themselves, as opposed to guys who have been in the league for a while and how they take care of themselves. And so I think the younger that you can kind of get a hold of those things, I think it just benefits you more. Obviously, everybody goes through their own, you know, stages of maturing and stuff in their career. But, you know, having guys like that who were so solidified and, you know, had their routines and stuff like that, I think it was pretty good for me to be able to see.
Now that you pass on this knowledge and you've been able to experience so many different things, you've also been extremely just blessed to play with legends. You know, you talked about Vince as someone who, you know, mentored you, Z-Bo, but you also played with a guy like Dirk and, mm-hmm. you know, Champ, one of the best scorers, really dominated. And then you see a guy like Luka, who's kind of, you know, passing the torch on to Luka, and now you've seen what Luka's done, and it's incredible. What was that dynamic like, playing alongside Luka and Dirk at the same time and seeing the difference in Luka's growth? And, you know, Dirk kind of, you know, removing himself from the game.
Yeah, I mean, Dirk, he played 21 years with the same organization. And like you said, I mean, he was one of the most unstoppable offensive players in the league for a very, very long time. And to see how Dallas embraced him, and to see how, you know, him going out, you know, how much he really did for Dallas, I think was amazing. And then to see him, like you said, to kind of hand over the torch to a guy like Luka, and to see kind of how he's taken that torch. And, I mean, he's done some amazing things in his first few years. So, you know, it's pretty cool to kind of see that dynamic and to now, you know, obviously playing with him, but now being on a different team and to see, you know, his stat lines and stuff, you know, everybody's going crazy over it. And it's like, you know, I've seen that on a nightly basis. And so, you know, it's pretty cool to kind of see him continue to grow and continue to try to take that next step for sure.
How different for you, you think about in America, you come up through high school, natural route, go to college. You went to one of the most storied programs in history. Luka didn't have that. You know, he was playing in, you know, for Barcelona in a Euro championship and then flying a week later to get to the draft and then, you know, go from one pro league to the other. How different do you think that was? And like, have you ever thought of it that way as, you know, you in America, we have such a, you know, this is a foundation, these are the steps, where someone like Luka pretty much left school at a young age to play in a pro league with men.
Yeah, I mean, it's just different, which I think is so cool about the world is the world has so many different experiences, different worldviews, different things that they think about and things that they believe. And obviously over there, like high school or college isn't really a, you know, as huge as it is here. You know, I think one of the main, I'll say for most Americans, one of the main things is to try to make it to college, whether that's academics or athletic or whatever. And over there, it's not nearly as huge for them. And so, you know, I think that's what's so cool about the NBA is it brings so many different kinds of people from different ways of life, different parts of the world. And, you know, obviously, like you said, I mean, he's 15 years old playing on a grown man's league, you know, getting paid to play or whatever, however it works over there, as opposed to us 15, we're still in high school, you know, like we're still trying to figure out what we even want to do. And so, you know, I think it is cool to kind of have those dynamics and, you know, obviously it looks like it's paying off for Luka for sure.
Touching on the personal side of things, both you and your wife are very active in your communities. You're giving back, you've got charities. Over the last year, aside from COVID, we've had, you know, an unbelievable year from the standpoint of racial injustice, social issues. You know, we've now just brought in, or you guys have in the U.S., a new president in Biden and Kamala Harris. How has that changed the way that you look at things and how you give back? Like, you have this platform, you've been able to make it to the league, and you have a real, real opportunity to drive impact and change. Over the last year, what has that done for you, and what do you guys want to do now moving forward?
You know what, man, like without getting into all of the, you know, craziness that's been going on when it comes to, you know, like you said, injustice and COVID and presidential race and all that sort of stuff. You know, my whole mindset in life is to try to make the world a better place than it was when I got here. And obviously that'll look different in different arenas, you know, so whether that's on the team trying to help guys that are younger than me or trying to encourage guys and, you know, be that guy that's always trying to lift them up or whatever it might be, or whether it's, you know, having and being vocal throughout some of these things that have been going on. You know, I think one thing that all of this, you know, that COVID itself has done, I think, you know, which is a positive, I think that you can take away from, is it's caused people to really realize what's important in life. You know, it's made you really take a step back and realize, okay, you know what, like things that I really thought were like paramount for me to live life really aren't. You know, and then you add all of the extra stuff, you know, the political race and stuff like that. I think the problem is you see a whole bunch of division in the world right now. You see a whole bunch of hate, you see a whole bunch of just, sides going at each other. And for me, man, like my biggest thing is like, you know, my faith is huge, right? And obviously everybody doesn't believe or everybody might not agree with kind of what I think, but I think love is where real growth can happen and real change can happen. And when there's so much hate in the world and so much, you know, division, like I said, trying to fill in some of those gaps with love and trying to be there for people and care for people and stuff like that, that's what I'm here for. And, you know, hopefully I can continue that. Obviously, it's a big part of that is kind of how my wife lives. She's been a huge encouragement to me as far as trying to live that way. And so hopefully we can continue to do that. And hopefully, you know, the world can kind of, you know, grab hands and try to come together as well. So you know, we'll see how it goes. Obviously, like you said, we brought in a new president. And so, you know, we'll see how these next 4 years go and we'll see what we can do.
COVID definitely, for the first time, it's not like any of this is new. People had no choice but to take notice. And recently we had Rico Hines, assistant coach from the Kings, on the show. And he said that he had to always be 10 times better than his counterpart in a white coach. And he had to live with that. And just hearing it, most people never think of it that way. But those are the realities. And, you know, if you think of your journey, I'm sure there are times that maybe you didn't notice. But now when you look back, you're like, wow, there's been so many times that, you know, you're profiled or there's prejudice. And it's like, why does that exist?
You know, so I've been blessed enough to not necessarily have to endure injustice that I know of a lot of people having to endure. You know, I did come from a family that was a mixed interracial family. My dad was black, my mom was white. And so growing up, especially in Texas in the South, you know, we would get funny looks or, you know, people would kind of look at us weird. We'd walk into a restaurant or we'd walk into some store or whatever, you know, so I had to deal with that. Then you fast forward a little bit, you know, I'm mixed, and then I'm married to a white woman. And so, you know, having to go through that dynamic a little bit, and I'm still processing through all of it, you know, with her family and talking through things with her family, you know, because it's just two different sides, you know, and that's the unfortunate aspect is, you know, there seems to be sides in the world. And, you know, but at the same time, just because I haven't had to deal with that kind of injustice, like I know a whole lot of people, I'm not going to sit here and act like people haven't. You know, I've had teammates who have, you know, told me stories of things that they've had to go through. And it's like, man, like it is real, you know? And so, you know, I think that's the whole thing is like understanding and listening to other stories and other sides of things to try to get a better understanding. And I think that's really what needs to be happening is just listening. And if, you know, you still might not agree with people, you still might not think that what, you know, what they're saying is right. And you still might think that you're the one that knows everything, but as long as you listen and you at least give it a chance to kind of make sense in your head, I think that's all that we can do really as humans.
We got to listen. We got to be aware. And the conversation has to keep on happening until we get to a point, and, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take time. And to your point earlier, like the world just needs more love. At the end of the day, we have to embrace each other and there should not be sides. You know, it's crazy to think that we're still living in a world with sides, but, you know, as if we can continue to advocate and talk about it, I think that there's going to be progress every day. Today's a super sad day for the basketball world, man. Marks the one-year anniversary of Kobe, Gigi, and the other passengers on that flight. What did Kobe mean to you?
You know, it's funny. My dad growing up, Kobe was his favorite player. And, you know, it was, you know, I got to take a picture with him and meet him one time at a camp. It was one of my years in college. They had like a college Nike thing. And so I got to meet him. I got to take a picture with him, but I never really got to know him. Obviously, he was, you know, one of the best players to ever play in the world. But then also, I think what was so cool to me was to see after he finished playing, the amount of energy and the amount of time that he put into being a father. You know, I think that's what was so cool to me was, you know, you hear stories about how crazy his work ethic was when he was playing, you know, and how, you know, it seemed as if he didn't have much time for anything else except for basketball. And then he finished and it was like, okay, now it's time for me to really put in time with my, you know, with my family, with my daughters. And so I think that's what was so cool about it. And what's crazy is this time last year, I was with the Mavs still. And we were in OKC whenever everything happened. And, you know, it felt as if everything was fake, man. Like, it felt like the world stopped for a second. It felt like it was just fake news at first. You know, I remember seeing it for the first time and just being like, whatever, dude. Like, that's just somebody trying to get, you know, the world riled up, and then everything came out. And so, you know, it's still a very sad time, I think, especially for people who were closer to him and were kind of more involved in his life. But I mean, for the basketball world, I mean, it was a huge blow. And so, you know, all I can do is send thoughts and positive vibes and prayers, you know, to his family, wife and stuff. And, you know, hopefully it can, you know, get a little bit better for him.
Yeah. It still doesn't feel real. I think so many people can remember where they were, you know, when the news broke, and it still doesn't feel real. So, you know, yeah, just sending love to that entire family and everyone that was affected by it.
You know, even walking into the OKC arena and having the moment of silence and them having the, you know, I think almost every place had like a video for Kobe. And so having that, I mean, it was, you know, the first couple games after it happened didn't feel like they were that important, to be honest with you. It just didn't seem like that was the most important thing at the time. But, you know, obviously everybody got back going, but it was a huge blow, man. And that was the first iconic person, like once I was old enough to really understand, that passed away, and really made the world like take a break, you know, and for me personally. And so that was a very sad time, a very crazy time. And so hopefully there's just more good times, yeah, for the people involved.
You know, you say you had the chance to take a picture with him in your college days. So from one legend to another, you know, Michael Jordan's influence at UNC. Did you ever have a chance to meet MJ?
Yeah, well, we met him a couple times because he was the GM or the owner of the Hornets. He couldn't really come around a ton, I guess, because of, you know, the whole NCAA. But I mean, the year after we lost, he came in and gave us a speech, or I guess after that game that we lost in the championship game, he came in and gave us a speech. And I don't know how much really people were able to listen, cause it was such an emotional time. But then he also came back for, when he announced that Jordan was going to be sponsoring the football team as well at UNC. And so, I mean, obviously there's certain guys that walk around and they just hold a certain power. And that's kind of MJ. So, you know, it was pretty cool to be able to at least be around him a little bit while I was at school.
And I mean, that presence when he walks in, and, you know, we all are familiar now with The Last Dance. It's crazy that that's also felt like forever ago. But, you know, The Last Dance comes out and it's just that MJ fever again. And he was just a different breed, man. Talk about winner in everything that he did. So just, you know, there's not many people that get the chance to even be around him. And I'm sure as you are on this amazing journey, there are times that you have to sit back and reflect on some of the greatness that you've been around.
Exactly. There's been, I mean, all sorts of greats around me. So it's definitely been nothing but a blessing.
And, you know, as far as, you know, 4 years in, there's so much ahead for you, and you've been able to soak up so many different experiences. What is important for you now as you continue to grow along this journey in the NBA?
I think it's just, man, it's just continue to attack, you know, where I'm at now. You know, for me, it's been kind of a weird season, you know, haven't played a ton, and, you know, getting a chance last night to play a little bit. You know, it's just realizing how much I love the game of basketball, right? Like, I love working out. I love doing the things to be able to play basketball. And so, you know, like I said, you know, it's just continuing to enjoy the moment, and continue to try to chip away. And if I continue to do that, man, whether I play for 15 years, 6 years, whatever it is, I can walk away saying, hey, I gave everything I did and I did exactly what I wanted to do. So that's kind of my mindset.
You said it's attack the now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a mantra that you live by. And I love that. Just you control what you can control one day at a time, and the rest of it will take care of itself. You know, trust the body of work and go from there.
Yeah, exactly.
And as far as just the competitiveness of this league, you know, getting to the playoffs with Dallas, now you're with this young team. you know, people talk about championships and how hard it is to get to the championship. You know, you've never been to a championship yet in the NBA. What have you learned about this league as far as what does it take to even get to the playoffs? And then when you get to the playoffs, how, what does the mindset look like there to get to the next round?
I mean, I think, you know, what's crazy is like, it's hard enough to just win a game in the NBA, let alone make it to the playoffs and let alone making it to the championship and winning it. And I think that's what I've realized is, you know, in the NBA, guys are, I mean, it's the best of the best athletes. And, you know, it's so difficult to win a game. It's so difficult to have success in the NBA that, you know, that's why the mindset of just chipping away and continuing to try to get better is really the mindset that you have to have. Because you might have one game where you go out there and you lay an egg and get beat by 20, maybe against a team that you're supposed to beat. But then it's like, okay, you got to keep on chipping away. You know, like, it's not going to be easy. You're not going to be able to walk into a game and say, okay, you know what, we got this one, because it is the best of the best. And so I think, like I said, the mindset, just chipping away and trying to get better each and every day is kind of how you have to be.
You know, we saw that game, what was it, last week when Colin Sexton went off against Brooklyn. I mean, no one expects that. And then it goes to, I think, double overtime, and he scores, I don't know, 20 something points in the OTs. And it's like, yeah, there's no such thing as a scheduled win or a scheduled night off, because this is the best of the world. And any night, it could be anyone's game. So, you know, it tribute to what you just said is, it, you know, you have to be prepared every day, and you're a professional. And if you don't take that mindset, you're going to get caught in the weeds.
Exactly.
Well, man, I appreciate you taking time and making this happen for us. We really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun, and just listening to you today and following your journey and your career. We're looking forward to cheering you along the way and sending all the love from Canada.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm sending all the love back to Canada. And I appreciate the support, and I appreciate you having me today.
Thanks for tuning in to the Title League podcast. Join Trish and I every week as we take you into the lives of the players and personnel from the WNBA and the NBA. Tune in wherever you find your podcasts.